It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. 2020 has been a difficult year for all of us. More than one out of every 1,000 Iowans has died of COVID-19. As a state, we've had more than 250,000 confirmed cases of the virus. But even for those who haven't been directly affected by COVID-19, it's been a difficult year with financial losses, lost opportunities, and isolation. With a dark and difficult winter ahead, this hour we're going to talk about ways we can connect with and support our neighbors, loved ones, and those who are struggling. This hour, neighboring in a pandemic. We'll talk about ways that we can reach out safely during this time, and I'll talk with Iowans who've been working hard to build community and support others. You are welcome to join the conversation with your experiences, things that you've done that have worked, or things that you wish that people would do. My first guest today is Paul Lasley, professor of sociology at Iowa State University. He focuses on rural life. Hello, Paul.
Good morning, Charity.
Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
And I want to start with defining this term that we're using. Neighboring is kind of an old-fashioned term, although I hope it never goes out of style. But when you say neighboring, what do you mean?
You know, I use that term to encompass a lot of things. It's more than visiting. It's helping. It's reaching out. It's connecting. It's really the social fabric that defines many of us as neighboring. And, you know, the question is, who's one's neighbor? Well, historically, we define neighbors as people that you shared a community with, or a neighborhood, maybe the people who live down the street or down the road. But, you know, in this electronic age, neighboring is really sort of independent of geography. So it's people that you may be friends with on Facebook or social media. It may be the people across the street. But the key is the connection, the relationship with friends, loved ones, people that you share common living space with. Maybe it's in a dormitory or maybe it's in an apartment house. So neighboring is kind of an elusive term, but the concept that I've been stressing is Iowans have always reached out and helped each other in terms of disasters or tragedies. We've seen this in economic, financial times like the farm crisis, but we've seen it when there's been a major fire or a disease or an outbreak. If one looks at the history of Iowa, Iowans have always sort of linked arms and approach things, whether it be a natural disaster or events that's beyond their control. And in the pandemic, as we look at what's forecast as a dark, grim winter, it's imperative that Iowans dust off those neighboring skills and reach out to those that they're concerned about.
You know, we've talked a lot in recent years about a growing social isolation in our country as our culture has shifted, as people have spent more time online and less time outside seeing people face to face. What are your observations about that? Do you feel like leading up to this pandemic, were we already experiencing isolation?
Well, I think so. I think that we get so tied up in our own lives that sometimes we forget about those that are not connected in our networks, whether it be face-to-face or on the internet and social media. You know, there's a lot of research that shows that social isolation has important physical as well as mental health consequences. You know, and I have written about that. As teenagers, all of us, as either children or teenagers, have been grounded by our parents. And perhaps it was sent to our room as social isolation. And God, we hated that, didn't we? And as we got older, maybe we weren't sent to our room, but we were. The car keys were taken away from us. And that sense of social isolation. the penal reform systems, the penitentiaries and prisons use solitary confinement to punish people because it is hard for us as social creatures to be isolated. And yet during this pandemic, when we're encouraged to practice social distancing, many people view that and sort of recall those days when they were told to go to their room, that they or maybe sit in a chair or be segregated from their playmates or their classmates.
Right. So it's felt like punishment to everyone. But I mean, more than punishment, more than, frustration. You are, and we've talked about this on the program before, but you are particularly concerned about vulnerable people in rural areas in Iowa, where
yes.
some of the older fashioned kind of neighboring is still
yes.
very important. Tell me about those concerns.
Well, we've seen a decline in neighboring through the surveys that I've done here at Iowa State over the years. There's still a sense during crisis that people reach out, and we see examples where maybe a farmer becomes injured or disabled, and so, unfortunately sometimes maybe a death, and the neighbors all come together and harvest the crop for the surviving spouse and make sure the chores get done and those sorts of things. Now, that's sort of the magic of crisis and disasters, that people come together. It seems like that there's been more hesitancy to do that during this pandemic, in part because there was a strong sense of denial early on, people feeling that they were invulnerable, infallible to the disease, and people rejected the sense of the seriousness of the pandemic, rejected CDC recommendations to wear masks and to practice social distancing. But, the concept of neighboring, and what I've been suggesting, is wearing a mask is an example of being a good neighbor. You don't want to infect. And unfortunately, this virus transferred by asymptomatic individuals. And so it's not only to protect yourself, but it's to protect others by following CDC recommendations. And of course, there will be people that say, yeah, but in spite of that, you can still get it. Well, that's true. But you need
to
practice.
lower your risk. And that
yeah.
that political divide has, I think, deepened the isolation, especially in rural areas in Iowa, where people who are vulnerable and are being careful, then they are not in the same boat as
right.
their neighbors. And so other people may still be socializing and they'll be left out.
And unfortunately, that's the case. And, when you look across the landscape of rural Iowa, there are a lot of senior citizens, a number are single, and the research shows that loneliness and social isolation contributes to sense of anxiety and depression. Some of the work that has been done by the Iowa Department of Health shows that since June, we've had about 30% of all Iowans that are expressing increased levels or ongoing levels of anxiety and depression. That's one out of three. The pandemic is both a biological health crisis, but it's also a mental health crisis. Now, the state of Iowa and many other states have created hotlines, and I've actually written a bit about that, and you may have seen it, but using funds from the COVID crisis response, Iowans have I think it's called the Presidential Disaster Declaration. But there's a website, and the COVIDRecoveryIowa.org or the Iowa Concern Hotline, 1-800-447-1985, has been experiencing increased numbers of calls of people reaching out, seeking, if nothing more, a confidential listener that they can sort of express their concerns about, not only maybe themselves, but what's happening in their community or among their neighbors. And that's what we've been trying to encourage. In this period of social isolation, there are still things that people can do.
And we will talk about those throughout the hour. But I was thinking a lot about how, you know, obviously technology can connect us in some really wonderful ways. And people have been using video conferencing in some really powerful ways and creative ways as well. My family just decorated gingerbread cookies together over Zoom on Saturday morning. And it was pretty great to get to see my little nephews in Chicago, you know, and it wasn't like seeing them in person, but it was okay. But yes. Also, just picking up the telephone, I think, is something that maybe we've gotten out of the habit of doing, Paul. And and that's a pretty powerful thing as well. We are going to have to take a short break. And Paul, you're going to stay with us throughout the hour. We're going to hear from other people who have been building community, supporting people during this time of COVID-19. We'll talk about some solutions and some ideas for ways that you can be a good neighbor and reach out during this time safely. And of course, we'd love to hear from you as well. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me right now, Paul Lasley, professor of sociology at Iowa State University. And I want to mention again, COVIDRecoveryIowa.org. It's a website that can connect Iowans with free virtual counseling and assistance for everyone in the state affected by COVID-19. And that's all of us. We'll be back in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, neighboring during a pandemic, reaching out to those in our communities and elsewhere, people we love, people who are struggling. How can we do it safely during this time? We're talking about that this hour. And with me is Paul Lasley, professor of sociology at Iowa State University. And Paul, before we invite some other people into this conversation, what are some of your ideas, things that people can do to make sure their neighbors are okay, even if this is somebody who you don't have a strong relationship already?
You know, the easiest thing is to pick up the phone and simply check in on them to make sure that they're okay. Is there anything that they need? You know, we all have telephones, and in this time, you know, now sometimes it's possible to stop by and stand on the porch or the stoop and with face covering and talk to your neighbors. But the easiest is to pick up the phone. Now, you know, and maybe it's sending a card, a postcard saying, you know, gee, I miss seeing you. I no longer go down to the local coffee shop. I miss seeing you, but just want to make sure you're okay. This is very strenuous, but I miss seeing you. It's about communicating to the recipient that there's somebody there that cares for them. Recently, I got an email from a Central Iowan, and I wanted to read because I think it is so spot on. This is a person that I have named Red Ryder, and here's what she said. I'm such an introvert and hermit. I live out in the country by myself since my husband died a decade ago. I like my own company and am comfortable going days without human contact, but I know that is not good for me. I vowed last March that during the pandemic, I would call 3 to 4 people every day and have a conversation. I can say I have done that religiously, although I didn't think I'd be doing it so long. The connections and reconnections I have made have been just tremendous. I have a number of older folks and singles I call regularly, where I say little and just listen for often close to an hour. Folks are so hungry to connect, talk, and feel valued and cared for. I think I'm making a difference for others, and I know I'm making a difference for me. That captures it. Just to make two or three calls or three or four calls, maybe if you're busy, can't do it every day, but to just simply check in with folks. Here at Iowa State University, the Department of Animal Science, the Block and Bridle Club, started putting together care packages to help quarantine students because of the social isolation. Now, those care packages that they put together for these students that are quarantined in their dorm rooms or their apartments include things like cough drops, snacks, hand sanitizers. But food wasn't as much of a problem. But simply the message that was communicated, and I thought this really captured it, the message they included in those care packages was, we're thinking of you during this difficult time. Hang in there. Hope you feel better soon. So simply reaching out, let people know that there's others that are concerned about them. Well, you can also do that with a care package for those that are either have contracted COVID or are at risk. A few weeks ago, I drove a care package down to my daughter, who is a ICU nurse in Des Moines, and she contracted COVID. And while I couldn't see her or my grandchildren, I just took down some bouquet of flowers and a bottle of wine and a box of candy and some trinkets for the kids to play with. And I left it on the stoop of their house. Now, that was very difficult for a grandpa not to see their grandchildren. But it's simply letting people know that you're concerned. Now, fortunately, my daughter did fine, but I couldn't take the risk of contracting it. And, there's lots of folks in Iowa that have not been able to see their children or grandchildren. And, of course, this is a time of year when family is so important. But we're all in this together, and if we all practice good hygiene, we can help stem the tide till we get vaccinated.
And it is, it is one holiday. And it's more than one holiday, but it's one year. Yeah. And
yes,
if we are all careful, hopefully we will make it through to see each other for the next holiday, or we can celebrate when things warm up and vaccines are well distributed. Paul, stay with us. I want to take a caller here and then bring some other people into the conversation. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100 or send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Richard's on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Richard.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, it happened this fall. It was October 31st. I was trimming a tree branch that kind of was hanging over in my neighbor's yard, and the branch went the wrong way, and most of it fell in their yard. My neighbor next door, Ginny, she helped me clean it up. Bless her so much. And I gave them a gift basket as just thanks. So it's Ginny and John, my neighbors in West Des Moines. I love them. They're so thoughtful. And they listen to NPR.
Oh, that's great. Well, Richard, thank you so much for sharing that. And I mean, Paul, I think that just goes to show that a small action can make a big impact and make someone feel really, really good.
That's right. And of all the communities across Iowa that experienced the derecho on August 10th, just look at the hundreds of people that turned out to help their neighbors clean up their yards and help with down trees and clean up. You know, that's the magic of disasters, that people still have that sense that they need to be helping. And we've got to move that sense of helping one another to this pandemic. Just as Richard's neighbors came and seen he needed help getting his limb cleaned up. That's the connections we need to be building.
Yeah, it's interesting that the pandemic hasn't really spurred that in the same way as our social justice protests. So we'll talk a little bit about some of the ways that people were able to support each other during those protests and some of the good that has come out of that. And the derecho, those are two events that did bring people together in the way that we normally see with a disaster. And yet the pandemic, because it's so unusual and dangerous, but also because it was so politicized, has not really sparked us in the same way. I want to bring some other people into the conversation. Sure. Our next guest is Mary Frances Evans. She is the executive director of IRIS. It's a free news and information service that broadcasts for Iowans who are unable to read because of blindness, visual or physical impairment, or learning differences. Mary Frances, thank you so much for being here today.
Good morning, everybody. You know, I think you should just let Professor Lasley take the whole hour.
Well, he's sticking around. He's not going anywhere. But Mary Frances, I want to talk a little bit about the people that you serve through IRIS, because during this time of social isolation because of the pandemic, I suspect that many of the people that use IRIS services are among vulnerable populations, and not being able to see well or not being able to see is something that can lead to isolation anyway in normal times. How have the people that you serve been coping?
Well, Charity, as usual, you nailed it. Your suspicion is correct. You know, we were talking about social isolation here at IRIS and at other reading services across the country probably 5 years ago. Social isolation and loneliness are one of the listed side effects of vision loss. And if you think about it, you know, when your vision deteriorates, you drive less. So your ability to go down and have coffee with people is less. It's just harder to get around. And so we've been talking about this for a long time. And this pandemic has only sharpened and deepened the pain that comes from the isolation and loneliness. So one of the things that is kind of a side effect of IRIS, you know, of course we are here to read the newspaper out loud, to make sure people have equal access to print information. But we are really a voice in the night for people who don't get a lot of visitors. Like I have listeners, just got a call this morning. One of our listeners, the power cord to her radio broke, and they need me to replace it for her. And she said, can you get here today? Because IRIS is her companion. Another listener, Maggie, she says, I'm one of those that relies on IRIS. It is my best companion. I fall into the category of a blind senior, and I'm very scared during these times. She says, IRIS is that voice in the darkness that makes you feel like everything's going to be all right and that you simply aren't alone. So kind of, you know, the perfect storm with all of this has come together with the pandemic and then certainly with the storms, because when the storms happened, especially in eastern Iowa, you've got people who experience these storms but can't really see the damage or have a different disability that precludes them from getting outside and, you know, looking at what happened to the roof. And so there's a lot of fear there. And a lot of, you know, inability to get a good idea of where you stand after this.
Right, because of the power outages, but also cellular outages. I mean, people just could not make a phone call.
No. Mm-hmm. And then the scammers came. Mm. So someone knocks on your door and says, you've got roof damage. Give me $1,000 to get started. You can't confirm that roof damage. So we've been working with the Attorney General's office. There are some pretty flippin' fantastic lawyers. We've been directing people to call IRIS, and then we will hook them up with a volunteer attorney who will be their wingman. And do not sign a thing. This was, you know, right after the storms. We were really pushing, do not sign a thing unless you have someone there with you to verify all the things, and we'll be there. But anyway, what we do can only work because of volunteers spread not only across the state, but we have a couple in other states as well. And these are people who sit in their houses and read the newspaper into their iPhone or their laptop. We have people in Iowa City, Sharon Falduto. She reads the Sioux City Journal. I mean, you don't have to live in the city of the paper in which you're reading during these home reader times. Before the end times, we had little studios all over, including one right there
right.
at KSUI. But one of the things we have done that's a little bit different than pre-pandemic is we've kind of dialed it back. Before it was news and news only, and we've kind of encouraged our volunteers to be a little more conversational, to try to provide a little more connection to our listeners than just a straight up delivery of the news. And then the other thing we've been doing now, you know, before people ask, yes, we always need more volunteers. IowaRadioReading.org. You can learn all about it. And it looks like we're going to be in this posture of reading from home for quite some time. So we're going to be needing people forever. Another thing we started is our Phone a Friend program. And initially we set out to phone individual listeners, just like the professor was talking about. But we discovered quite a need, as far as mental health goes, to call our own volunteers. Because we have volunteers who are, you know, who are vulnerable and staying home, and they're also isolated. We've got volunteers who have zero family, and they're coming into IRIS, you know, once a week or whatever it was. We were like the only place they went, and right. now they can't come here. So our Phone a Friend program has been pretty cool. We've been able, we have a format, pardon me, and we go through a list of questions, and we do ask, as the professor said, you know, what do you need? Is there anything you need, or how can we help? But mostly, we just chitty chat,
nice.
And it does make a world of difference. So, IRIS is, we're the radios, and it's all free and everything. But we're also finding other ways that our volunteers can be of service to their neighbors.
And Mary Frances, I think that you are making such an important point, and that is that if you are experiencing isolation, volunteering or helping someone else can also help you. I mean, I know that even in my family, we've started volunteering at a food bank. The kids and I go to a food bank whenever we have an opportunity. And it's been such a lifeline, such a way to connect with the community, feel like we're making a difference. And we're probably helping ourselves as much as we're helping anybody else in this. I mean, and Mary Frances, you see that firsthand.
Yeah, I have two examples of that. One is when the Des Moines Playhouse had to shut its doors for a while back at the beginning of all of this. A good friend of mine, we do audio description there, where volunteers call play-by-play on the live elements, visual elements of a performance, and they do it into headphones for patrons who are sitting in the audience. We'll do a story on that when we're doing that again, but the woman who helped me get the program started at the Des Moines Community Playhouse, Leanne Backrose, you know, she was furloughed. And suddenly her very busy life had fewer things required of it. So she reached out and said, I want to read. And that woman read two newspapers a day for an hour each, 7 days a week she dedicated. It takes about 90 minutes to make your way through a paper. She dedicated every single evening for us, recording these papers and sending them to us because it gave her a sense of purpose and a deadline. Another woman, Paula Carezzi, who lives near Iowa City, her job, she couldn't work I'm not sure what her profession is, but she was kind of furloughed, and it was the same deal where she needed something to do, and more importantly, a deadline within which to do it. So I absolutely, you know, being needed is just about the best thing in the world.
Yeah. Well, we have to take a break. And Mary Frances, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thanks for having us. Everybody take care.
You too. Mary Frances, director of IRIS. You can find out more at iowaradioreading.org. Paul Lasley, professor of sociology at Iowa State University, will stay with us. This is Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about neighboring in the midst of a pandemic, reaching out to others, developing community, supporting those in need. You are welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Paul Lasley, professor of sociology at Iowa State University. And I want to bring our next guest into the conversation as well. You've probably heard of him. Willie Ray Fairley is the owner of Willie Ray's Q Shack in Cedar Rapids. After the derecho struck Cedar Rapids on August 10th, he discovered a new way to be a neighbor to those in his community, serving hundreds of free meals every day. Willie, hello.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Great. Thank you so much for being here. And I mean, Willie, obviously a lot of people were tremendously moved by your response to the derecho. Can you take us back in time? What were you thinking when in those moments when you thought, what can I do to help?
You know, I drove home in a storm, which was the craziest ride of my life. And, when I got home and, you know, the storm still went on for another probably 40 minutes, seemed like. And then once we got through picking up some trees and everything, I asked the lady, like, hey, let's take me to the shop. She was like, what do you need to go there for? Because I had already been to check on to make sure everything was together. Mm-hmm. And I came back and I realized how much food that I had that I was going to go to waste because there was no power. And I'm like, hey, let's get the grill. We can cook, feed the neighbors. And, you know, start something here. And we did that part, and then we just kind of just kept going.
Yeah, it certainly built into something that got so big and so meaningful for people. Now that you've had some time to reflect on your experience, what does it mean to you to have been able to help out your neighbors in that way?
Man, it means a lot. You know, it's something that I always wanted to do, but I was never in position to help in that form. But since I was in position at this time, I felt like it was the best thing to do because I know that was so many people that was going without. So we just try to meet the demand and do what we can from a small standpoint of a small business to help out.
And people responded so powerfully and have wanted to give back to you. And I hope that pays off for you and your business in the future. What advice do you have for other people about ways to reach out and help during COVID or any other kind of crisis?
You know, I just more challenge everybody. Just help someone. You know, if everybody helps someone, then we wouldn't have too many people without anything.
I think that's great advice. Willie, thank you so much for talking with me today, and please stay safe.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Willie Ray Fairley of Willie Ray's Q Shack in Cedar Rapids. Again, in the wake of the derecho, he fed thousands and thousands of people. Paul, in listening to Mary Frances talk about how powerful this experience is for her volunteers and Willie Ray talking about how this experience was so powerful for him, an opportunity to really help out in a just such a concrete way. What do you think there are as far as lessons for all of us to take away from that?
Yeah, you know, both Mary Frances and Willie Ray absolutely hit the nail on the head in giving, in helping. You benefit others, but you also benefit yourself. And they both talked about how the benefits that they receive by helping others. And you know, that's all about that being a neighbor, it's a reciprocal relationship. You help others, and they in turn help you. And it and that's really been the lesson that sometimes we've forgotten. In giving, you also receive. And they both talked about that in different ways. You know, that's what we are going to have to do as we move through the next several months until we have the effective vaccine where we can sort of begin to resume normal. It's reaching out. And in various ways, you know, whether it's a phone call, whether it's a text message, whether it's a Zoom or sending cards, or in the case of Willie Ray, feeding people that were in desperate need. There's all sorts of ways. You mentioned you and your family working at the food bank. There's all sorts of ways that we can continue to reach out to those. And one of the big concerns that I have, and we've talked about people being isolated, but I'm increasingly concerned about the incidence of post-traumatic stress syndrome that we're likely to see among our frontline workers, who are simply exhausted. When you look at the numbers of ICU beds that are occupied, hospitals at capacity, the sacrifices that doctors and nurses and EMTs. I talk with a few of the public school teachers. Everybody is stressed out. I just see so much evidence, and I'm worried about how long they've been under this stress and what the longer-term implications will be. So I think to the extent that all of us that knows a school teacher or a fireman or a policeman or a doctor or a nurse, I would hold those people up. Send them a card saying, you know, you don't know me, but I just want to thank you for continuing to serve our community or our neighborhood. Those are messages of encouragement that we all should be doing.
Yeah. Let's involve some other people in the conversation. Of course, the pandemic and the derecho were not the only huge challenges of 2020. It's the year that just gives and gives. Of course, we had the Black Lives Matter movement responding to police violence. And Supply Hive is a nonprofit based in Des Moines. It grew out of the Black Lives Matter movement in the summer months. And their stated mission is to provide a space of nourishment through extraordinary times in order to build leaders in local communities. And I've spoken with the founders of Supply Hive, but with me today is Cam Schneider, volunteer coordinator for Supply Hive. Hi, Cam.
How are you doing this morning?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today. And the origin story of Supply Hive is really that it grew out of the need to support all of the people who were out in the streets raising their voices in the heat of summer. It grew out of this need just to help people get some water and get some snacks, but it has grown into so much more. Can you describe just briefly what Supply Hive is now?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so like you said, it really started with just coolers full of sandwiches and bottles of water. But over what has been a really quick 6 months, it's kind of flown by. We have been able to expand our programming through the support of our community and donations, because we're a 100% crowdfunded organization. So all of our financing comes from our community and then is redistributed into our community. So with that and with all the support that we've received from the wonderful people of Des Moines, we've been able to actually put together programming that is able to go beyond just snacks and water, whether that be supply drives where we're able to distribute essential supplies into our community. We've done events for mothers and babies, getting out free diapers and clothes and cribs and everything you can think of there. Currently, we're working on cold weather packs for the members in our community that are experiencing houselessness this winter, because as you and I know, the Iowa winters are harsh. And if you're in a position where you're unable to stay in a house throughout the winter, that can be an extraordinarily tough time. But we're also moving into, you know, given that COVID is happening and social distancing needs to be taken into account, we're moving into online programming as well, doing some educational seminars coming up here in 2021 and trying to continue to do the work while making sure that everyone is taking the proper health precautions.
And I feel like having talked to the founders of Supply Hive, and I wonder if you feel the same way, that there really was kind of an epiphany about the need to invest in community and build community among people of color in Des Moines, but also beyond that as well, that this the simple act of handing out those snacks and bottles of water just really uncovered this profound connection.
Absolutely. You know, there was a moment in, I believe it was in June, where Zakaria Hill, one of the co-founders and the president of our board, and I were talking after an event, and it came about, we were talking about sustainability, and we shared concerns that the social justice movement might fade throughout the summer and people might get burnt out, because we were marching and protesting and holding events almost every day of the week for quite a while there. So we began this discussion of sustainability, and we started to look at sustainability beyond the typical sense of, you know, maybe solar power or, you know, hybrid cars, things like that, but looking at sustainability within a social movement. And what does that look like? And as we got into that, we understood that in order for there to be a sustainable movement that fights for change, there needs to be a network and an infrastructure of support for those that are participating in that fight. So kind of our goal became to create this network where we could support our community, you know, whether it be through food and water or through, you know, helping with spiritual things. You know, we're doing free therapy for people of color that have experienced trauma throughout these months to kind of uplift that community. And we move into programs like that, understanding that if there's not, you know, a facilitator in the middle to help get out supplies that are needed and provide space for people to breathe and to heal, then there can't be a sustainable movement. So kind of our role in this is to be those worker bees that get out and get the job done and make sure that everyone has what they need.
And I suspect that you've found a real sense of community yourself in doing that.
Oh my gosh. Yes, absolutely. It's really wild to think, but I don't think that prior to 2020, anyone that I'm working with now, I had known before. I sit on our board of directors with some amazing women, some amazing women of color. And in that group, I didn't know a single person before these protests began. But now it's truly is like a second family. And even beyond that, with the volunteers that we bring into our program, that connection deepens every event. Because I think when you're doing work like this, when you're working in your community and providing essential things for people's lives to, you know, continue at a high quality of life, that connection really does deepen and get stronger over time. Because it is a rewarding thing. Like your callers before had said, you know, even when you're helping someone else out, you do get that intrinsic value for yourself that feels really good to help someone. And when you do that as a group, that really does strengthen your ties.
Yeah. Cam, thank you so much for talking with me, and you take care.
Absolutely. You too, Charity. You have a good day.
Thank you. Cam Schneider, volunteer coordinator with Supply Hive in Des Moines. And we're nearly out of time. I want to mention that Grace from Iowa City called to say that she sews and has been making masks and putting them in her little free library, and they're gone very quickly. What a lovely way to take care of neighbors and invest in your community. And we're going to just very briefly talk with Chris Adcock. She is Southwest Iowa COVID-19 Mutual Aid Facebook group administrator. And Chris, thank you for being here.
Oh, it's nice to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, and I'm sorry that we have very little time left, but you have brought people together online to connect and communicate in a really powerful way. Just tell me a little bit about how this Facebook group has brought people together.
Well, sure. So at this point, the group has 3,350 members, and they are mostly regional to Southwest Iowa, looking at the background data, and 2,700 of them are active almost all the time. And so our information that's going out, it's not political. It's not partisan. It's based on kindness and sharing of information, because I knew that on March 16th, when I hit the go button, that what might happen if we didn't create this space is that rumor and speculation and things were just going to get out of hand on, you know, how we talk about COVID and how in our area down here, which is basically an information desert, I have to say, because media doesn't really reach down here consistently, that it was going to be important to have a space where we could have local information, you know, resources, you know, mental care, financial care, nutrition. How do we get that to each other, and how do we inform each other, and how do we talk about COVID in general? So I created this, and it's gone swimmingly. I mean, I go out in the public, of course, wearing a mask, and people are like, thank you for that group. I refer to it all the time, and it's just been a really good, safe place to hear about what's going on in our area.
And I'm sure that you have helped so many people through that and probably saved some lives, Chris. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you. That's nice.
Chris Adcock is administrator of the Southwest Iowa COVID-19 Mutual Aid Facebook group. And Paul Lasley, we have just about a minute left here. I mean, we've heard so many stories of people reaching out and connecting. And one of the big takeaways that I have from this is not only should you just do it, but also that there are ways to do it. We can do this if we're creative.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we need to draw upon our long legacy of helping people in need, wherever they're at, whether it's through a natural disaster or whether it's through the pandemic, people that have lost their jobs, people that have been furloughed. There's a huge need out there. And I think, as Willie Ray mentioned, if all of us would do just a little bit, we could share the burden and we can all get through this together.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for being here today. And I just really appreciate you and your message. And I hope you stay safe.
I will. And same to you and all of our listeners. Let's demonstrate to the nation that good old-fashioned neighboring is alive and well here in the Midwest.
Paul Lasley is a professor of sociology at Iowa State University. He focuses on rural life. And this hour, we've been talking about neighboring in the midst of a pandemic. Thank you so much to all of our guests and everyone who called to share their stories today. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Rick Brewer, Dennis Reese, Matt Alvarez, and Caitlin Harrop. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.